table.
Dignity.
Security.
Freedom.
Freedom.
Respect.
Justice.
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 Just this.
Just this.
Equality.
Equality.
Remedy. Protection.
Fairness.
Fair time.
Privacy.
Right.
Well.
Peace.
Movement.
This is my mistake, and let me make it good. I raise the wall, and I will be the one to knock it down.
Asylum.
Identity.
Family.
Home.
Conscience.
Expression.
Expression. Expression. Expression.
Participation.
Democracy.
Welfare.
Work.
Work.
Leisure.
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 Health.
Education.
Progress.
Culture.
Human rights.
Charter Dana.
Solidarity.
Fill in the border. I raise the wall, and I'm the only one. I will be the one to knock it down.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners on CJTR Community Radio at 91.3 FM and over the internet at cjtr.ca. We can also be heard on Sastel Max at channel 806 and Access Communications Digital Service on channel 341. Wherever you are, welcome to Human Rights Radio, hosted weekly by Amnesty International volunteers who are a worldwide movement of people dedicated to the promotion of human rights and the safety of all human beings. We're building a world in which every person enjoys the rights included in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and other human rights standards. Our theme song is titled 30 Words, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, written and performed by REM and a collection of musicians from around the world. My name is Jim Hutchings, and joining me today is my co-host Gord Barnes, and we've got another special co-host, Crystal Lintott. She says she's not going to say anything this morning, but we'll see what happens. She does have an opinion occasionally. So, and our special guest is Gail Bowen, who is writer-in-residence at the Regina Public Library. And Gord provided me some information here about Gail. So I'm just going to go over some of it here, Gail. You have a mystery book series featuring Joanne Kilbourne, a university professor, sometime political columnist, and a wife, mother, and grandmother, someone we can all relate to.
Yeah, and in Regina, so yes, we can all relate.
And the first six books in the Kilbourne series, Deadly Appearances, 1990, Murder at the Mendel, we got the Mendel in there, 1991, The Wandering Soul Murders, 92, A Colder Kind of Death, 94, winner of the Crime Writers of Canada Arthur Ellis Award. Was that the Colder Kind of Death that was the winner?
Yeah.
Okay. And Killing Spring, 96, and Verdict in Blood, 98. And they've appeared as made-for-television movies with worldwide distribution. That's pretty impressive.
Tell my kids.
Oh, kids, do they even pay attention?
No. No.
Okay, and there's more. There's more. Burying Ariel, 2000. The Glass Coffin, 2002. The Last Good Day, 2004. The Endless Knot, 2006. You just keep on going and going here, like the Energizer Bunny. The Brutal Heart, 2008. And The Nesting Dolls, 2010. And we got a few more here. The Kaleidoscope and The Gifted. They've all met with critical and, even better, commercial success. And in June 2008, Reader's Digest named you Canada's best mystery novelist. Wow. And, well, anyway, there's more here, but we don't have a whole lot of time.
No, that's all right.
So anyway, welcome.
Thank you.
And we're here to talk about the right to read. And I'm just wondering, Gail, to start off with here, why do we need a right to read? That seems like, I don't know, redundant.
That's exactly what my grandson said today. He said to me, I said I had to go off to the, he's eight, and I said I was going to be on the radio, and he said, are you going to talk about the Olympics, Mimi? And I said, no, I'm going to talk about book banning. And he said, well, what is book banning? And I said, well, it's when people decide that a certain book should not be read, and they have their reasons for that, and they attempt to get the books taken off the shelf. And he said, but shouldn't that be the person's decision themselves if they take the book off the shelf? And I said, yeah, that's pretty much what we're about. Yeah.
He gets it.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's part of it then.
Yeah, for sure. And it is, I mean, I'll read you the little blurb we have, which is really nice because it just is. Freedom to Read Week is an annual event that encourages Canadians to think about and reaffirm their commitment to intellectual freedom, which is guaranteed them under the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Freedom to Read Week is organized by the Freedom of Expression Committee of the Book and Periodical Council. So that's it. And what we're doing at the Regina Public Library, there are many, many different ways of participating in this all across Canada, but we have two events on Tuesday, February 25th at 7 o'clock. Dr. Nick Ruddick will be doing a facilitated discussion of George Orwell's 1984. And the interesting thing about 1984, I think, is that although it was written in 1949, it is very timely now because it really is about the political correctness issue, people believing just what media tells them rather than considering things. So I think that should be a really good discussion that Nick will be facilitating. And that's, as I said, on the 25th between 7 and 8 in Public Meeting Room 1 at the main library in Regina. And then there's what I'm here to talk about today, and that's our event. And it is it's called the Banned Books Cafe, and it is on Wednesday, February 26th between 7 and 8:30 p.m. on the mezzanine at Central Library. And this is going to be kind of cool because we've got four well-known members of the community, and we asked each of them to choose whatever they wanted. We have lists of books that were banned, but by the many, amazingly, they have each chosen something they would like. So there is Stephanie Langenegger from CBC Radio, and Stephanie's chosen The Lives of Girls and Women, which has been banned. Professor Kelly Handerick from Drama, and he has chosen Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass, which is banned because of homosexuality. And Dean Mike Sinclair of St. Paul's Cathedral, that's our cathedral, so he had to do it. Anyway, and he's going to read from Huck Finn, which actually just in the paper this week, in the Globe and Mail, where they have this date or whatever in history, I think 2 days ago was the publication date of Huck Finn in 18, I think, oh God, whatever, anyway. 100 years ago or whatever. And but it has been challenged on every for language, for its attitude toward government, to just for non-patriotism, raw language, and then for the fact that the language, talking about political correctness, that the language referring to Jim, the black man, is not acceptable to many, and actually to most of us, I guess. And so anyway, he'll be talking about that. And Jennifer Campo, who's the MLA from Saskatoon Fairview for the Sask Party, will be reading something that is still a surprise because I haven't heard from her. So we'll see. But anyway, I think the big thing we want to do is we're hoping to have a good talk about all of these issues, it's very easy for, it's very easy for us. I mean, I've got all kinds of books that seem so. I was explaining to my grandson this morning. He said, well, what? Tell me one book that was banned. And I said, well, there's a book called Iggy Piggy. And it was banned because it's the three little pigs. Mm-hmm. But then when their house is blown down by the bad wolf, instead of letting him eat them up, he builds a raft and gets the piggies on that. And then they go out to sea. And some father objected to this on the grounds that although Iggy was a free spirit, he might have endangered the pigs by having them go out. And Ben didn't get that, neither do I. I mean, since the wolf was going to eat them anyway. I mean, those are the ones things that are pretty an easy call on our side. But then there are the serious questions that we'll be dealing with, like what do you do with a book? Like who decides? What do you do with a book that is homophobic or racist or sexist or just intolerant in some way? And where does hate literature fit into all this? So those are some of the things I think we'll be talking about. And I think it should be a good evening.
I think so.
Any evening that you're involved with, Gail's going to be a good evening. So I must say that the last time I was in an event that you had a significant role in was the fundraiser for Frontier College, and it was so well attended. I'm sure they did very well that night, and it was really a lot of fun. So I'm sure the people who are listening today will take an interest in the events next week at the library, and maybe before we get through the program towards the end, we can sort of repeat the dates and times and all detail. Because over the course of the hour, sometimes people kind of join us late in the hour, so we do want to get the information.
And when is that hockey game over again?
Yeah,
I know. We might pick up some extras then.
I was just checking here, and Canada's leading 1-0.
Oh, okay, all right, good. Thank you.
Okay.
But it is a real special treat to have you on this program this week, Gail. And, you know, you've covered some of the books that are of interest relative to Freedom to Read Week. I'm just wondering, from your perspective, you actually mentioned at one point one of your own books was banned. And is there some detail you can share about that?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
You've joined an
illustrious group.
That's right.
Yeah, I know. Well, this actually does bring up another aspect of book banning, and sometimes just because I think sometimes what happens is that a book is placed in the wrong hands. And in this case, I write the Joanne Kilbourne series. I write another series for it that's a literacy series, and it's aimed at adult learners. And I taught it for St. John's University for over 30 years, and I noticed how often we lost our male students. So I wanted to choose, when I was writing this other series, and there are four books in the series. First of all, they are written at a grade 4, I write a 4.5 language level. And although I'm going to read you a little bit in a minute, and I don't think you'll pick up on the 4.5 language thing. But that said, they're a lot darker than the Joanne series, and they are certainly not for children. And they are for I know that grades 11 and 12 just eat them up. And the boys eat them up, which is kind of what I was going for. Big hit in prisons. And, they're just all kinds of, and they work. They work really well. However, this book was placed, and this is a particularly, although I think they're all a little bit brutal, but this one, it was placed in a Florida grade school, library, and, a child took it home. And the parents felt that it was not appropriate, nor was it appropriate for a child to be reading it. It's about a boy who decides he's going to kill his whole family. And they follow, the thing is, Charlie has, the premise is that Charlie has a late night radio show, and he only has like an hour and a half to get this kid to not do what he's done. He sent in this plan and he keeps sending things into Charlie. Well, that is not reading that would be appropriate. But I blame not the parent even particularly, but I think people should just be careful about where a book ends up. That's it. So
you've got to be careful about those radio shows too.
I know true enough.
So is that one of the pieces that you were thinking of reading from today?
It is, and I will be happy reading it.
Is that a good time to do that for you?
It's fine with me.
I'm always happy to do whatever I'm supposed to do.
But this is the opening chapter, and it won't take very long. I should tell you as well, these have become, these are all available as audiobooks now, and they've been done by Gabor Maté's son, who was my great hero, doctor. And I know. In Vancouver, who really, on East Hastings, who cares for those who others will not care for. And but his son Daniel did them, and they are available as audiobooks. But here is Charlie D's world, and I think this is okay. I'm not going to. I mean, anyway. When the sun goes down, the only people on the streets of the neighborhood where I work are people who have something to sell. The women who stroll in skimpy outfits and platform shoes with 5-inch heels sell love, or what passes for love in the dark. The tattooed men in wife-beater shirts, ripped jeans, and scuffed black combat boots sell drugs that take their clients up, down, or out, wherever they need to go to dull the pain of being alive. I'm in the pain-dulling business, too. What I offer is a voice that helps people get through the dark hours. My name is Charlie Dohonik. I host The World According to Charlie D, the late-night call-in show on CVOX Radio, all talk, all the time. I started out as a midnight DJ. When people began phoning in to talk about their lives, my producer and I decided to cut down on the tunes and focus on the voices. It was a solid decision. Now we just use tunes to fill the gap between stories. I'm not a shrink or a social worker. The only special skill I have is that I know how to listen. People are hungry for that. Most nights I ride my bike to work, but the city is in the middle of a heat wave, so tonight I'm on foot. The pavement beneath my feet is soft with heat. The stench of rotting garbage hangs heavy in the air. It's not a pleasant walk, but this is my neighborhood. And as I pass by, the hookers and drug dealers mumble greetings. I mumble back. One of the girls calls out, "Happy Father's Day, Charlie." "I'm not a father," I say. "If you ever decide you want to make a little Charlie Jr., I'm available," she says. Her laugh is a bray. The first fingers of a headache reach up from the back of my neck into my skull. Aspirin time. Our local drugstore is grim. Its windows are crisscrossed with protective bars. Several signs announce security cameras and warn that there is minimal cash on the premises. Tonight there's something new, a sign with a picture of a fancy set of golf clubs and a reminder that says, "Don't forget Dad on his special day." Ours is not a neighborhood where people have reason to remember Dad on his special day or on any other day. Most people in this part of town would be hard-pressed to identify their dads in a police lineup. But inside the store, the greeting card racks are bright with images of fathers and sons doing what fathers and sons are supposed to do together. Play baseball, shoot hoops, catch fish, golf. When I try to remember if I ever did any of those things with my own father, I come up empty. My eyes move to the metal security mirror overhead, and I see myself. For 33 years, I've lived with the wine-dark birthmark that covers half my face. Mirrors have never been my friends, but my image, distorted by the shiny convex curve of metal, stuns me. I look as if I'm wearing a blood mask. My reflection has caught the attention of a child whose mother is checking out the greeting cards. The boy is perhaps 4 years old. He stares at the security mirror for a few seconds, and then his gaze shifts to me. His eyes widen, and he draws near to get a better look. His mother is a dishy redhead with a tennis tan, very brief white shorts, and a white T-shirt that showcases her considerable assets. Everything about her shouts money and privilege. What she is doing in this store is a mystery. When she notices her son staring at me, she hisses, "Don't stare at the man. It's not appropriate." "He's got blood all over his face," the boy shouts. His voice is high and piercing. Quick as the flick of a snake's tongue, the mother reaches out a perfect hand and slaps her son's cheek. He howls. I meet her gaze. "That wasn't appropriate," I say. As I walk over to the cashier and take my place in line, I feel the perfect redhead's eyes boring a hole into the back of my head. And anyway, we get into that. So yeah, it's a, Charlie has a problem with his own father, and there are some other several father-son combos. But the one at the heart of this is that as soon as he gets to the studio, the boy has sent a picture of their house and exactly the order in which he will kill his family. And so Charlie D has an hour, and he, of course, they don't know who he is, and he has an hour to talk him down. So,
wow.
So this puts you in the same league as Margaret Atwood?
It put me in the same league as Margaret Atwood. You know, it's interesting. I went through that list of books.
Yes.
I have taught so many of the books on that list. And of course, but you see, I taught university. That's a whole different thing. I've taught The Handmaid's Tale. It's a great teach.
Right.
I've taught A Jest of God and The Diviners and both of those. I mean, with Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale, the objections were that it was anti-Christian, and that there was and it certainly does. It is a dystopia, and it's exactly what would happen, I think, if the right-wing Christianity were following the path that it certainly seemed to be at that point. And if we've noticed the reaction to Michael Sam, the NFL or the college football player who said announced he was gay last week. I mean, there's still many among the world who think that way. I was really pleased. Sports Illustrated had a story saying. A cover story of Michael Sam, I'm a big football fan anyway, saying, you know, it's time the NFL caught up with the rest of the world. And I think that's pretty nice, you know, that maybe we're getting to the point where there are some rights.
Great.
Pardon my ignorance here, Gil. What country was Margaret Atwood's book banned in? Was it in the States or
and
a particular
here
state?
Here as well.
Here as well?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. No, it was, there are people, and you know, when they say banned, I mean, often it's challenged and then it's sort of, which is a different, it's sort of part of the process. Mm-hmm. But even the fact of a book being challenged often will get it just taken off college courses very quietly.
Okay.
Nobody wants to end up with a problem or a high school class. I think I might teach. I mean, it's a question judgment call. I think I might teach A Handmaid's Tale to a grade. I was going to say grade 13 until I'm from Ontario.
Uh-oh.
And old. but I think I might teach it to an advanced English class in high school. I mean, there's certainly nothing. I mean, as far as sex is concerned, there's nothing in that particular one that is, I mean, it's the sex is almost non-existent except for the purpose of procreation. So that wasn't it. With Margaret Lawrence, certainly I think what happened with A Jest of God, I've actually been trying to remember what could be there. And there's a scene where she masturbates. And then with The Diviners, and I will say that Margaret Lawrence, who a friend of mine did her PhD on Margaret Lawrence and saw all the papers, and Margaret Lawrence was just devastated by the fact that her books were banned in Peterborough. Mm-hmm. She lived in Lakefield, which is like 30 miles away.
Right.
But I think there it was the fact that it was sex, but it was the fact that her lover was Métis.
Okay.
And I think that was, I mean, I was trying to isolate that, trying to take whatever factors that were. So, I mean, it's a variety of reasons and so peculiar and particular to each circumstance.
Mm-hmm. So the book would it still have been available in a library?
Yeah.
Sort of thing?
Yeah, it would have. But then, of course, she, you know, I mean, there are, and this was in the 70s, and I mean, there were just ugly, ugly letters about her. I've been to Lakefield. We have some land near there many times. It's a very small community. I actually did the Writers' Festival there a couple of years. I forgot all about that. And which is celebrated on the July weekend closest to Margaret Lawrence's birthday. And, but you know what? I asked people if they knew who Margaret Lawrence was. No.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And, you know, and I think that, and it really is, it was sad, but I do think I know she was wounded. And you know, she never wrote another work of fiction after The Diviners. That was it.
That's
she wrote
sad.
Adult,
that really, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. She wrote books for kids and nonfiction, but that was that. So, I mean, it's an arrow that, also hits writers.
So, you know, I was just thinking here, Gail, we've had a really great discussion so far, and I really enjoyed your reading. I think Jim would probably like to take a couple minutes just to plug something that's connected to the radio show and community radio. It's a good opportunity just before the station break to maybe
good point.
Do that.
I was thanks for remembering, Greg.
Okay.
And it's the Look and Listen Lottery.
All right.
And it's Look and Listen Lottery time again. We have the grand prize of a trip for two to New York City, which consists of return airfare for two four-star hotel, return airfare for two at a four-star hotel for three nights, Mets or Yankees baseball tickets, tickets for motor coach tour of Manhattan, and tour of Radio City Music Hall, plus $1,000 cash to spend any way you want.
That's, any way you want?
Any way. You betcha. Second prize is a $1,000 travel voucher from Carlson Vaughan Lee Rickert Travel. And a third prize is a relaxing getaway at Moose Jaw's Temple Gardens Mineral Spa. That's a two-night stay, breakfast and dinner at Harwood's Dining Room, and $100 gaming credit at Casinos Regina and Moose Jaw. Now, the tickets are only $20 each. We're only going to sell 1,200 of them, so the odds are really good. Our draw date is May the 8th, so that's a few months away. So you've got time to think about it, but tickets can be purchased here at CJTR's offices at 1102 8th Avenue, or you can call the radio station at 525-7274 during regular office hours Monday through Friday. If you want to pay by credit card, you can order tickets at Look and Listen Lottery at CJTR.ca or call the station. For more information about the rules of play or prizes, you can go to www.cjtr.ca. So we're all excited about this. This is, I think, what, about the third year for the New York trip, right, if I'm not mistaken. It's very popular, and anybody that's gone has really enjoyed it, so I definitely recommend it for a mere $20.
And it's a great way to support the diversity of spoken word and music programs on community radio.
Exactly.
You know, it's all done by volunteers, but it's pretty crucial to have the support of the community to...
Yep.
To keep the equipment going, and there's some significant things that the CJTR needs to do around that issue.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, there's always things that require money.
Yeah.
So anyway, with that, we're going to take our break, and we'll be back talking with Gail Bowen.
Yes. softly, the world is still sleeping. You need eyes on the run. Close your eyes and soon she'll be taking you home.
And that was a very nice selection by Rachel Van Zanten. And thanks to Gail for providing this CD. How did we happen to pick this particular one, Gail?
Well, our son Nathaniel is a drummer, and he's in a number of local bands. And I asked if he had a CD with him. He came over this morning, and he said, I said, is there one in the house somewhere? And he said, no, but I've got one that will be perfect. And he had played with her, and it is very pleasant to him.
Right. It's called The Cracks. That was the title of that particular track. And, I've never heard of it before, but there's a whole bunch of music out there.
Absolutely, yeah.
So just because I haven't heard of it doesn't mean. That's great. All right.
So if you've just joined us during the last few minutes or during the station break, our special guest today is Gail Bowen, who's the writer in residence at the Regina Public Library. And the discussion today is Freedom to Read Week. And there are events next week at the library that Gail can share some information about, maybe towards the end of the program. But, you know, we've had a really interesting discussion so far, Gail, and you were referring to the impact that in the first half the book banning and what happened with Margaret Lawrence and how devastating it was for her. And you know, one of the other people that had a book sort of banned and challenged was, and there was controversy over the title, was Lawrence Hill. And I noticed he had mentioned that burning books is actually designed to intimidate people. It underestimates the intelligence of the writers, stifles dialogue, and also insults those who cherish the freedom to read and write. And you have a little bit more information about what happened with his book that you can...
Yeah, it was. He had, and I mean, again, it was a question of. I mean, this is not wholly, the books are not either banned or challenged or rejected wholly by only the intolerant. Often it is this whole business of political correctness is pretty interesting, and his book was called is called The Book of Negroes, and that is a historic fact. I mean, there was. The Book of Negroes was a book kept by the British naval officers at the end of the American Revolutionary War, and it documented the 3,000 blacks who had served in the war and were fleeing Manhattan for Canada in 1783. And at that point, unless you were in the book, you couldn't make it to Canada. And his protagonist is trying to get into the book, and hence get to freedom. So, I mean, it was not a casual title at all, but it was changed. The title was changed in the United States to "Someone Knows My Name," because there was again political correctness, a sense that people that blacks would object to the title "The Book of Negroes," and in fact, Lawrence Hill said that many times when he was doing his book tour. Blacks would say to him, I'm glad you changed the name, because I would never have read your book if it had been called The Book of Negroes. And so sometimes we do a self-censorship. Mm-hmm. I just had this is such a small thing. I'm editing one of my own books right now, and I had a line. This is how sensitive, how careful you have to be. I had a line in there about a guy that Joanne and her husband know, and he's a lawyer, and Zach is a lawyer, and he says, you know, he's one of the few lawyers in town who really gets under my skin. And Joanne says, it's his aftershave. He smells like a guy who has a harem. And I had to take that out, because that was a slight to Mideastern people.
So that book is still in the works?
Oh, yeah. I changed it because he wears industrial strength aftershave. But I like the other one better. But the thing is, you know, if you're not, you don't pick up on it yourself, you know? And anyway, so I thought that was an interesting thing. But, you know, and again, of course, the most famous case is Salman Rushdie, where his whole life was mm-hmm. changed and threatened,
sure.
you know, for the satanic verses. And so, and most people, of course, don't have that. Although, you know, I mean, certainly if you look at, you know, we're talking about one level here, political people who write books that are politically challenging. They're the ones who are, I think, really often really in danger. Dr. Zhivago, right. And that was still ran into a lot of trouble, even after, you know, the regime had changed. But the author was challenged just for being critical of government, you know, mm-hmm. and even though that had happened. And I mean, I think we've all got those stories, and you must with Amnesty for sure.
Well, I mentioned yesterday when we were chatting before the program that one of the people who is a hero of mine is and a fabulous writer is Vaclav Havel, and certainly he was imprisoned in Czechoslovakia, a prisoner of conscience, adopted by Amnesty International, and he was a playwright and mm-hmm. A very well regarded playwright, but the reason he was in jail was because of his plays, and it's an interesting kind of story in that eventually. Things evolved in Czechoslovakia. He was released and became president. So
yes.
Things have evolved. Yeah. But, I mean, his writing is fabulous. But he went through, and other people in Czechoslovakia went through a very, very difficult time under a repressive government. So, you know, you're referencing of, you know, the people who are political writers, particularly, is a you know, a really important one in this context.
Often I have been reading during, sometimes it's Freedom to Read Week. Sometimes it is just it's an Amnesty associated reading. But we will read and there will be an empty chair for the writer and just with the name of the writer who is imprisoned for their writing. Now that still is something that happens, you know, for every year. I mean, you'll go and there'll be the name and the picture of the person. And so, I mean, it is aggravating for us and it makes me angry to hear about books being banned and challenged. But, you know, we are, as writers, we're still walking around. You know, we're able to say, really, what we are able, I mean, you know, this is, as you know, getting back to what I started with, but the whole business, I think part of it is just to make certain that Canadians don't take for granted the fact that we have these intellectual rights and creative rights, that these things are things that should be, that we should keep a focus on, and we should not allow these to be eroded by being indifferent or not backing up people. You know, that one line on the Freedom to Read Week thing is, let us know if, you know, just goes to everyone. Let us know if you hear of a case of a book, like in a small town or something, you know, if you hear of a book that has been challenged, and let us know the resolution, because that matters too. I mean, often it can be resolved. People can sit down and work it through, you know, for example, that case with, what I mentioned with my book and with the grade school thing, I mean, to me, that would have been very easy to resolve. I mean, it doesn't, nobody needs to be in a camp. And as a grandparent, the first thing I would have said was, I wouldn't want, you know, my little people reading that either. But it doesn't belong in the little people's library. It belongs, elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, I still am a great believer in common ground that we can somehow find it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just thinking, too, that, you know, even though we're here in Canada and you don't think that this sort of stuff exists here, it's a little more subtle here. It still exists here. You know, I think of, say, somebody like Tom Clancy, who wrote his book about Stephen Harper. And I'm sure he's still feeling repercussions. That has changed his life.
Really?
Yeah. I would think. Somewhat.
Thinking, too, of a book that I haven't read, but I noticed on the list that it was challenged down in Estevan, Saskatchewan, Hold Fast by Kevin Major. Yeah. I don't know if you're familiar with that book.
Yeah, but that's the one I was talking about with the kid. Oh. Listen up, fathead. Oh.
So where have I been?
I don't know. I guess you were thinking about lunch or something about that. Yes, I am familiar with that. And I read with Kevin Major in Newfoundland last August. And it was, everyone was genuinely shocked at the fact that this had not being taught in schools, because it's a beautiful, and they made a movie out of it that's so lovely, and it would have just been such a lovely companion piece. And yeah, is there anything else that I said that you were just into? Well,
so did you want to get that information out again for our listeners about the events coming up at the library, Gail?
Yes,
just before we because we've got time in the program yet, but it's probably worth sharing.
Sure.
And we are
having on Tuesday, on Tuesday, February 25th, Dr. Nick Ruddick will be doing a facilitated discussion of George Orwell's 1984, and that's in Public Room 1 of Central Library in Regina between 7 and 8. And My Baby is a Banned Books Cafe, and that's Wednesday, February 26th, between 7 and 8:30 p.m. on the mezzanine at Central Library. And some good people there, I think. Kelly Handerick from the Drama Department will be reading from Walt Whitman's Leaves of Grass. Steph Langenegger, an old friend, will be reading from Alice Munro's Lives of Girls and Women. Also, all these books have been banned or challenged. Lives of Girls and Women was challenged on the grounds that it presented an undesirable lifestyle. Mm. I guess being a life of a girl or a woman is undesirable.
Yeah.
Perhaps they had a point there. Dean Mike Sinclair, that was a joke. Dean Mike Sinclair of St. Paul's Cathedral will read from Huck Finn, which is the most challenged of books, apparently. And Jennifer Campo, the MLA from Saskatoon Fairview, will read something that is still a surprise, but it'll be good, I know. And the big thing is we want to get some talking going.
You know, when you just said My Baby, I thought there was some news that I wasn't aware of.
Oh, God. Yeah, that'd be another virgin birth.
We haven't heard. No, we haven't connected often enough recently.
No, we haven't. Now everyone's really looking like, really? Anyway, no, it's my project. How's that? Yeah.
Oh, that's what you mean.
Yes. Now, but getting ahead to the next project that we have at the library, this is way into April, but Jan Martell is coming down, and he will be talking about the keynote, and his keynote will be about his book, writing to Stephen Harper about what books have you read, so that's his keynote is going to be on that, and then we have some other things going on, but you're right, it really does reverberate, and I can see people who are very conservative and are great fans of Stephen Harper thinking, I'll never read anything Jan Martell writes again.
Which is a shame.
It is.
Really.
It is. And I think it's one of those, and it's human. You know, I mean, I would find it very difficult if a writer I liked was really critical of someone who was a hero. I mean, for Tommy, I'm critical of Tommy Douglas, for example. And I mean, I'd really have to bite the bullet to get back, you know. And these are self-censoring things that we do. Mm-hmm. And I think the point that Freedom to Read Week makes is that every time we censor, whether we do it ourselves or whether we are censored, that depletes our world, and it makes it smaller and narrower. And, you know, not to go on a totally terrible tangent, but I can do it really quickly. One of the problems, I think, with the internet is that once upon a time, I always say this to my husband because his cousin Lenny is just a right-wing nut bar, and I like him, but he's nuts, and he lives in Texas, and he is in the olden times, he lives in a little town. Somebody, when Lanny started spouting his craziness, somebody would have taken him aside, patted him on the back, and said, let's play a game of dominoes, and come on, Lanny, you know you don't believe that, and now he gets on the internet, and everybody he talks to believes that. And so I think that's what the danger that comes when you start saying you can't read these books, because that means that all you're going to read are things that are pre-digested and decided to or declared acceptable by mm-hmm. your church or a political party or whomever. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that's kind of the point, too, about all this, isn't it, Gail, that to sort of go to the library and shop for stuff that you think you might always agree with is probably not really going to yeah. serve you well mm-hmm. in terms of your, you know, your critical thinking path. Mm-hmm. You know, if you might not agree with Conrad Black, but you might want to pick up his book and read it once in a while. And maybe Ayn Rand, the same thing.
It's, oh, yeah.
You know, there's some good writing there. But probably, you know, you might not agree with every individual author's perspective. But to limit yourself
is to limit yourself. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's yeah. it. To limit your reading is to limit yourself and your chance to grow and be, yeah. you know.
Yeah. yeah. And learn.
Yeah.
So, I guess that's one of the things is that, you know, on the bottom of that bookshelf over in the corner in the library where they've got some stuff that you might not really appreciate, the point is that maybe somebody else does and, you know, it's their interest and it might not be mine, but it's available. So I guess that's one of the things that we kind of need to go back to around a week like Freedom to Read Week is that, hey, it's not all necessarily my taste, but it might be somebody else's. Mm-hmm.
Well, this was what came up because we just did a big thing at the library on erotica. And, I mean, they have erotica just flies out of the library. And I mean, I was really surprised. I said to Gord, I think I caught a break that night because it was the mm-hmm. night of the blizzard. So I think I was kind of expecting there'd be some people there who would take issue with the fact that we were having the discussion. But we had a really good group of people who really took the topic very seriously and the fact that, you know, what are the pro, I mean, there are pluses. I mean, mm-hmm. the fact that, you know, that we talk about erotica at least gets the subject of sexuality out on the table, so to speak. And, mm-hmm. You know, and just, I think allows us not to feel isolated, you know? And, so, I mean, I think it's, I mean, it's that big, to me always, this whole idea that, you know, and reading should enlarge your mind, you know, and or move you to action. And I mean, I guess that's all we're talking about when we talk about Freedom to Read Week.
You know, and there are, as you mentioned earlier, situations where either authors or groups of people are, you know, young women in Pakistan.
Yes.
Don't get the opportunity even to go to school. Mm-hmm. And when somebody speaks up for the right of young women to go to school and or learn to read, mm-hmm. bad things happen.
Yes.
So we do need to, these are fundamental rights, and we need to be aggressive about
yeah.
protecting them, I think.
And absolutely. And there are, I mean, and it's not always an easy call. That one of the books that was mentioned is, and I have not read it, but was a book that was, is written, I think it's, anyway, it's on our sheet. But anyway, it was a book that's written about children in Palestine. And, that, you know, just in that whole business of, oh dear. Anyway, but it's not easy. It was seen as, the Canadian Jewish Congress questioned it because they felt it was anti-Jewish. And, you know, this is the thing where you take a look at something and this Palestinian thing is hard, you know, a hard, it's the shepherd's granddaughter here. Okay, so I'll just maybe, because I think this case really struck me. It's not always an easy call. The Shepherd's Granddaughter by Ann Carter. In Ontario in 2010, so you see not long ago, B'nai B'rith Canada called for the removal of this young adult novel about the Israeli-Palestinian conflict from a recommended reading program for students in grade 7 and 8 in public schools. A parent with a child in the Toronto Public School also complained about the novel, I think I can get this done, because it's resolved, in a letter to Ontario's Minister of Education. The complaints describe the novel as anti-Israeli propaganda. So there was a big discussion anyway, and it came, Patsy Aldana, who was the publisher, urged the Toronto District School Board to defend students' freedom to read. Others defended the novel's educational literary value. In June 2010, a review committee said that the teacher should use the novel to encourage students to read and think critically. In August 2010, Chris Bentz, the Toronto District School Board's Director of Education, decided to keep the novel in the school's recommended reading program. So, there you have just an account of where something went through. It was challenged, but there was reason and talk, mm-hmm. and they came up with a solution that probably would work, mm-hmm. I think, for everyone.
I think discussion is key here.
Yeah.
You know, if a work like that is going to be controversial, let's discuss it.
Yeah.
You know, and don't just put it out there.
Yeah, exactly. No, I think that's a very good point. Yeah, and I mean, and I think the thing is, it sounds as if the point was made rationally, and was listened to rationally, and mm-hmm. so they came up with an answer. And that's pretty much what we're trying for all the time, I think.
So there is some reason left in Toronto.
Yes. yeah, not in City Hall, but elsewhere. Yeah, for sure.
You were the writer in residence at the Toronto Reference Library for
I was,
a while. That
must
have been an interesting. Was it during Ford's era?
No, it was pre Rob Ford. But you know, we were Ted and I were in Calgary when Nahed Nenshi was running.
Really?
And yeah. we were so excited about yeah. him, and because he is such a good mayor, and mm-hmm. everybody we knew that was the night Rob Ford was elected, and Nahed Nenshi. I got all these letters from Toronto saying we got the mayors wrong. Ford was supposed to be in Calgary, but I mean, Nenshi is so good. I mean, mm-hmm. He's so active in Pride, and you know, me immediately, you know, in the Pride parade, and I mean, there's God, Rob Ford, you know. Well, never mind. Yeah. I think a good thing about being an activist is there's you're never bored, you know. I mean, you're always writing letters, like yeah.
Gail, it's just been a fabulous discussion about Freedom to Read Week. Thank you so much for being on the program today, and I really hope we can have you back sometime soon. Jim, did you want to give a little plug again for the lottery? Because it's so important to CJTR.
We could do that one more time.
All
sure.
right.
Once again, the trip to New York City, and you know all the details there. The second prize is a $1,000 travel voucher from Carlson Vaughanley Rickert Travel. And the third prize is the relaxing getaway at Moose Jaw's Temple Gardens Mineral Spa. The tickets are only $20 each. We only have 1,200 available. The draw date is May the 8th. And you can get tickets at CJTR right here at the office at 1102 8th Avenue or by calling the radio station at 525-7274 during regular office hours, Monday through Friday. And we got a whole bunch of programmers wandering the streets here that have tickets. And, we got to get you a book to sell, Gordon.
All right.
I'll put one in my back pocket here as well so that we can sell tickets and help support community radio. And we all know the good things that happen at CJTR, the diverse opinions you're going to hear and the diverse music that you're going to hear, music that you will not hear anywhere else.
Yeah.
So it's well worthwhile and just one of the many ways that we can support Regina Community Radio, CJTR.
Yeah.
So there you go.
And thanks again, Gail. It's been wonderful to have you on the program.
It was my pleasure, Gord. Thanks.
All righty. So as we're closing this week's Human Rights Radio on CJTR Community Radio, we hope you've enjoyed listening to and have learned something new about human rights for all people. For information on past and upcoming shows with links to human rights actions and information, go to amnestysaskatchewan.ca. Peter Benenson, the founder of Amnesty International, often said, "It's better to light a candle of hope than to curse the darkness."